audio made of some extracts of Astral Horror through Gabrielle in Germany, the Association, Universelles Leben, Universal Life. The astral body is the soul. While incarnated, its energetic aura or corona, its radiation, is visible as varying nuances of color. After the demise of the physical body, the astral body or the real living person pulls itself out of this dying shell. The astral body is an invisible body that lasts beyond the death of a person. It is also called the soul, or soul body. The energetic aura, which once surrounded the person and which is now the radiation of the soul body, is also called the aura or the corona. The aura of a person, which is also the aura, the corona, of the soul, consists of energies of varying nuances of color that circle in radiation ellipses around the person and, after the individual's days on Earth, around his discarnate soul. The various nuances of color of the aura of a discarnate soul consist of energetic forces. These are the contents of the feeling, sensing, thinking, speaking and acting of the former person, which readily found expression in the person's radiation shell. Now, they form the corona of the soul. As long as the soul is in the person, the nuances of color change at every moment, according to what and how the person feels, senses, thinks, speaks and acts. This is what it's like on the Earth, in the coarse material and in the spheres that are close to the Earth of the material cosmos and of the finer material universe, the origin of each and any form of life, however, is the fine material kingdom of God. In the eternal being there are neither human beings nor souls. The radiation of a pure being consists of the divine forces of the law, the seven basic powers of the eternal being, in which all other basic powers are contained, in turn, as subregions. Thus, seven times seven forces of the law form the divine aura of each spirit being. The corona of a pure being thus moves about in the unencumbered seven basic powers of the eternal being, which, in turn, contain all the other basic powers in themselves. The aura, too, of the human being, likewise of the soul dwelling in him, radiates in seven times seven energetic forces. However, in the human being, these are burdened according to his behavior patterns. The aura, the radiation of the human being, changes at every moment, and on a daily basis. Expressed differently, the aura, the corona of the human being is constantly subject to change. This is because the human being unremittingly feels, senses, thinks, speaks and acts. Each one of his stirrings in life is filled with substance. This substance is what constitutes the individual character and the specific value of the human activities. So whatever the human being places into his feelings, sensations, thoughts, words and actions is what marks him, the human being, and his soul. The aura is what mirrors all of this. Every single person and his soul are an immeasurable sending and receiving station. Let it be repeated, with the demise of the human being, the astral body, the soul, withdraws from the dying body. It is marked by the inputs of the human being that passed on. For the inputs, the behavior patterns of the former human being, are also recorded in the soul. These specific traits then form the engraving of the soul and its aura, its corona. The person can, at every moment of a given day, update and position his behavior, that is, give himself a new direction, deciding for what leads to a positive, or else, to a negative, way of life. The positive, which the person puts into practice in his thinking and in his way of life, makes him more peaceful, reflective, and his soul brighter. But the negative also marks the person, it clouds his consciousness and darkens his soul. Both, light and dark, are the result of the behavior patterns of the human being, the patterns, which are reflected, in turn, in the nuances of color of his aura, corresponding repository planets in the material cosmos, as well as in a finer cosmos, absorb these energetic frequencies. Both cosmos are memory sources that are very extensive. Seen as a whole, they could be described in their unity as the cosmoses. But for a better understanding, let's remain with the denomination of coarse material macrocosm and finer material macrocosm. Every single person and his soul are an immeasurable sending and receiving station. This is also true of a discarnate soul. Via the potential of sending and receiving, which the human being unceasingly stores and updates, he receives each day, at every moment, hints from his memory potential that want to call his attention to heed or rectify this or that, that is, clear it up. This means that, during his existence, it would be his task to put in order those things that do not serve the common good, the unity, the peace and the freedom. There is no interruption in the process of sending and receiving, not even when the astral body, the soul of the human being, is discarnate. As soon as the physical body has died, the same thing takes place. The soul emits its aura, its frequencies, and receives what is active and current in the soul at just that moment. Everything, but really everything, is based on sending and receiving. The soul of a human being that has passed on thus continues to move in a cycle of sending and receiving. With the sending potential that the human being has transferred to the soul, the latter remains tied to these energy potentials, which form the engraving of the former human being. They are engraved in his soul. Like its erstwhile human being, the discarnate soul also is stimulated by its sensory perception to recognize and rectify the all too human aspects, its offenses. We human beings talk about sins against the cosmic law of love for God and neighbor. According to what is currently active, that is, what is due to be cleared up, the respective pictures develop in the soul body, even whole sequences of pictures from the inputs of its former human being. We could say that these point out to the soul through which culpable occurrences its human being burdened itself. These pictures thus reveal light and shadow, stimulating the soul with this to recognize the all too human aspects, the sinfulness, to feel remorse and clear them up. Step by step, it should find and walk the path which leads it via the material macrocosm to the corresponding planetary constellation of a purification plane. There, it becomes aware of further active memory inputs, which, in turn, show up in pictures or sequences of pictures. In this way, the reasonable and willing soul is able to bring into lawful order what was waiting to be dealt with. This side of life and the beyond are not separate. The individual's free will decides, for or against the cosmic law. Let it be repeated, the human being, as well as the discarnate soul, is constantly shown the possibility to rectify the negative, the burdensome. Each day can be for the person a day of recognition and serve to clear up a debt. The human being learns in his thoughts and, at the same time, in his conscience, about those not good aspects that need to be settled. The soul in the beyond experiences similar things in picture sequences that it is made aware of and feels them as suffering or pain, depending on the causes behind them. To serve our understanding, the following: the soul body is created as a particle structure, as opposed to the physical body, which consists of a cell structure. In its cell structure, as well as in the particle structure of its soul, the human being stores the pros and cons of its particular character imprint. So this means that the human being stores the energy potential that is either for the life, which is peace, unity and freedom, or it stores the energies that are against the life, like bindings, a lack of peace, egoism, violence, the all too human aspects. Whether human being or soul, in both, the free will for a free decision is inherent, either for the cosmic law, which is the cosmic, eternal life, or against the cosmic law, which is given in the will of the ego and has no basis. Based on his free will, the human being is responsible for his own life. The human being, himself, determines whether he burdens his body as well as his soul or liberates them from vileness, from the negative. If the soul has become detached from the deceased shell, the human being, that is, once it is discarnate, then, little by little, the inputs of its former person become effective. Regarding whatever culpability may exist, the soul can decide freely. Either it follows the path of redemption, which is shown to it via its inputs, or it continues to move in apathy and dullness, just as its human being was, not responsive to higher values, to life in general. If the soul adheres solely to the imaginations of its base desires, passions and drives, then such a soul mostly stays in the in-between realms of the beyond, and tries to siphon energy from those people who have similar weaknesses, depending on what it is as an engraving, as a debt. Dear reader, perhaps you will be thinking the following: what help can be given to a person in the entanglement of culpability, in the mill of sending and receiving? Perhaps you are also wondering if it isn't unjust that the soul carry the debt incurred by the human being. These questions are totally plausible. Above all, if the person does not question himself, if he is not aware of why he is a human being and that no energy, whether positive or negative, is ever lost. The soul in us is simply not of this world. It incarnated, that is, it became a human being, to rectify as a human being its negative engravings, the wrongdoings from former incarnations. Before its new incarnation, higher beings showed it what its burdens, its debts, are, and what could come towards it, the soul, in the physical garment. So it received explanations and teachings. No soul goes unknowing into incarnation. Everything is energy. Everything that the person thinks, says and does is energy. According to the law of sowing and reaping, the person himself bears the responsibility for all transgressions. So as human beings, we are called upon to make ourselves aware each day that everything that we think, speak and do, is energy. The cells of our body and the particles of our soul absorb the contents of our behavior patterns unceasingly. Everything that has not been expiated, and is thus directed against the cosmic law of peace, of freedom and of unity, has not disappeared. It remains in the soul as an engraving, even when the human shell no longer exists. At some point in time, the causes become effective, either in the human being, or, at the latest, once the person is deceased, in his discarnate soul. Let us view our world and its people from a distance. There is lying, stealing, cheating, celebrations degenerate more and more into eating and drinking orgies. The vices of human beings are often addictions that escalate into excesses, which, when practiced, can hardly be surpassed today. Let's mention just a few of them: gambling addiction, alcohol addiction, drug addiction, nicotine addiction, eating addiction, computer addiction, quarrelsomeness, abnormal sexual addiction, hunting addiction, vindictiveness, compulsive exploitation of people, which is associated with thirst for power, avarice, rapacity, even to bloodlust, the obsessive killing of people and animals. The addictions and greed are increasing in unimaginable brutality and violence. Children and adults are abused and raped, for example, without restraint. Wars are advocated and carried out with extreme weapons and a radical use of weapons, through which countless people often die a horrible death. People also don't shy away from killing other people in order to confiscate their belongings, or dupe others by bearing false witness to gain a position of power at the cost of others and much more. Since God's mills grind slowly, many a one thinks that all misdeeds go by without consequences or that others are to blame. The culpability of a deed is not always clear and apparent before the courts. For example, in a verdict, the one is given the right, the other is incriminated and convicted of the wrong. Perhaps the secular court even imposes a sentence on him. How often don't we hear in court, acquitted for lack of evidence? The one is free, the other is incriminated. The one accused, even pronounced guilty, sees this differently. Many an incriminated one doesn't get over the one-sided court verdict and swears to take revenge. There is no one-sided guilt. Even if the other one is acquitted, he, too, bears a certain share of the blame. Justice is reconciliation. This is why Jesus of Nazareth taught, "Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. Truly I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny." The law of cause and effect measures very precisely and justly each share of the guilt. Thus, An unresolved offense can easily turn a soul into a soul tied to the earth. Let it be repeated, all the contents of our feeling, thinking, speaking and acting, that is, the totality of the contents of our behavior, go into the cell structure of our physical body and into the particle structure of our soul. Although there are ever more people whose misdeeds gain the upper hand, the repository sources of the cosmos nevertheless do not have to grow, there is enough room for every soul. The cosmoses have been laid out accordingly, by the one who knows all things, including future developments. And so, let us be aware that every disregard, all addictions and excesses, the brutality, all violence and use of force towards people, animals and nature, towards the whole earth, is allotted justly to each individual human being and his soul in all detail and is recorded in the repository sources as his respective share of the blame. Animals do indeed have a soul. Many people unscrupulously torture animals. They keep them for slaughter in animal ghettos. The animals are often bestially killed in the slaughterhouses, their meat is consumed, or they are kept in scientific laboratories for experimental purposes. Human beings act as if animals were lifeless commodities. For example, the hunter slinks through the woods, often hiding in the high seat he built for himself, so that he can underhandedly shoot down the unsuspecting animal, which then, often having only been wounded, may drag itself along for days on end in fear and pain until it miserably perishes. Or let us think of the farmer who applies his combat agents against the life of the soil, such as, for example, pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, and whatever else can be obtained as a means of extermination. He also spreads animal and human excrements on the topsoil. With all these attacks on nature, the life of the soil contorts in convulsions and then suffocates. The farmer cares little whether the animals destined for slaughter have a miserable existence in unworthy stalls until they are transported to the butcher who then brutally kills them. His religion has determined that animals have no soul, so they are merely an economic factor. The cruel animal experiments are carried out in many places without any stirring of conscience because the religious representatives of certain types of people claim that animals have no soul, that they are nothing more than a commodity to be freely and arbitrarily utilized at will. Does this coarse society really believe that this and more will remain without consequences? The immoderateness and disregard toward the animal world apparently has no limits. But animals do have a soul, very much so. Their creator is God, who breathed the life into them, something we will read more about. A person's works follow him, in his soul. To repeat, let it be said that human being and soul bear the engraving of all that is antagonistic and which the person inflicts upon his fellow man, but also upon the earth and the animal and plant worlds. This and more are the works of the individual person, works that follow him. After the demise of the physical body, the works of the person remain in his soul as a corresponding engraving, unless the person recognizes in good time his often bestial, negative behavior, his vices, and remedies them by taking the steps that Jesus of Nazareth showed us. His words state the following: settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. Truly I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. It would be good and right if we, each and every person, were to critically and seriously question ourselves each day. For example, who am I? And where will I be after my soul disincarnates? But let us also not be deceived by hypocritical sanctimonies, as we can so often read on the gravestone epitaphs, like, he, or she, is now with God, or may he, or she, rest in peace, or he, or she, has now found peace, or is freed from long suffering. And don't believe the well-sounding speeches of the priests or pastors either, who stand at the grave of the deceased with raised voice, giving a theatrical ending using the same old lines such as, he, God, the Eternal, has now seen fit to take so-and-so home to him, earth to earth and dust to dust. may he or she now rest in peace. Or, we hear such things as, died in Christ, risen in Christ, to eternal bliss, etc. Surely there are more such unctuous words of comfort for the bereaved. What would the bereaved say if it were said of the deceased, his works not only follow him, but are engraved in his soul? That's how it is. And according to the law of sowing and reaping, according to their causality, they bear fruit. Let us look more closely at this. What are these deeds, these works, that go with most souls? In the end, they are all the wrongdoings of the person that are still waiting to be cleared up. It simply is the way it is. After the demise of the person, the soul is what its person used to be. After the eulogy or funeral oration, we hear for comfort, I knew this person for a long time. Or, I knew the deceased for many years. We should be mindful of the fact that no person, not even a pastor or a priest, can totally figure out another person. The human being is an ambiguous being, who speaks with a forked tongue in many situations. Most people are not even aware of this, because most people don't know themselves. They don't fathom what takes place behind their patterns of behavior. Few make the effort to explore their hidden ways, their ambiguity, by analyzing themselves with the question, who, actually, am I, really? Most people live in self-deception, that is, irrationally. They vegetate away their days and, as a matter of course, consider themselves to be better than their fellowmen. Someone who doesn't know himself often remains blind as a soul, being driven by souls that cannot desist from their desires and vices. To the same extent that the person doesn't know himself, his discarnate soul will not get its bearings after the death of his body. The soul will attain more clarity in itself only when a higher being that accompanies the soul can find a way to touch the soul with its advice. The soul will gradually become aware of what is presently active in it as a pro and con, and what lies on the con side, the debt, needs to be remedied. But not every soul is willing to accept the help from above, from the beings who are its guardian and teacher. The imprinting that a human being inflicts upon his soul often has far-reaching consequences. A heavily burdened soul, which has engraved on it the human tendency to think that matter alone is the ultimate, will resist every help. Many of these souls have been programmed by their former person and cannot let go of their desires and passions, of their thirst for revenge, of hostility and cruel philosophies of life. Souls that were oriented toward matter by their person, don't readily take the steps indicated to them by a cosmic repository planet or a higher being. And yet, it is exactly this, that would be the path on which the soul could rectify its negativities, its burdens, the path on which it could continue on its spiritual evolution, that is, its further development, in order to truly attain a higher quality of life. A soul that was programmed with the inclination toward licentiousness is the same as its former person in terms of unfulfilled desires. It is like its person once was. It is bound to sundry human habits, such as prestige, wealth, money, greed, power, as well as licentious desires and much more, and will long for the same over and over again. Let us make ourselves aware of the fact that the human existence is not real. If it were truly reality, the physical body would not have to pass away, then the human being would have everlasting youth. Hans-Peter Dürer, the former head of the Max Planck Institute of Physics in Munich, said the following, and rightly, what we call this side of life is basically the dross, matter, that which is tangible. Seen in this way, the human being is satisfied with the dross, which, among other things, is the ego. Every soul is finer material and invisible, intangible for the human being. And yet, it is present, for, in terms of energy, this side of life flows into the beyond and vice versa. If the soul is tied to the world of desires of its former person, then it is open for a new human birth on earth. In the end, every human birth already bears death. With its incarnation, every soul brings with it into this world what was not rectified in the beyond, as a soul. What was not rectified in the beyond can break open again on this side of life, that is, as a human being. The life substance of many people is shaped by virtual ways and means. The person behaves according to this condition, and later, the discarnate soul. As stated, this side of life and the beyond are not separate from one another. Bound to the all-too-human characteristics of their ego world, there are souls that bend people to their will for their own purposes, people they can reach, people who live in a similar world of thoughts and desires as they do, and who practice those vices which fit their own perverted desires. Souls which, based on their engravings, cannot let go of this world are also called earthbound souls. The whereabouts of earthbound souls are the in-between spheres within the material macrocosm, near the earth. Astral hackers, earthbound souls hack into people's life programs. Example, foreign programming in computers via viruses and trojans. The souls that we ourselves have programmed and that may be controlled by demons, do not utilize anything different than was familiar to their former human being, for example, one who had something to do with computer technology. The demon state, which fights against God, doesn't develop anything new, but merely reverses the spiritual divine law for its own base, corrupt purposes. The spiritual divine law is, send and receive and communicate with the All One, who is God. The adversary reversed it too. Send and receive and communicate with the negative forces. An example from a conversation with a computer geek can help give insight into many a fatal development. Every computer works on the basis of its programs, which the respective computer owner has programmed into the computer. He works with these programs and saves all the data that he wants to keep. So the decision is left to the owner of the computer what he wants to do with the programs in his computer. He enters into his computer what he thinks is good and right. He saves some of it, particularly what he needs for the long term, and other things, in turn, are deleted because they are no longer important to him. The user of the computer thus moves around in the computer world that has been arranged by him with the programs that he himself chose and enlarged upon, with which he occupies himself and from which he develops further uses. This, his individual computer world, is, to an extent, part of his identity. What happens now, with a so-called computer virus or a computer trojan? If an extrinsic computer user wants to utilize the data or operating system to damage it or use the main memory, the RAM, to gain something for himself, then he plants so-called viruses into the computer system. These viruses contain outside programs, which, based on the available programming, alter the computer to now be utilized for the purposes of the one who intruded on another's computer system, making it serve him. Of course, the owner of the computer will not readily grant entry to the intruder. So how do viruses and trojans get into the system? In important aspects they proceed quite like the earthbound souls do, which seek victims among the human beings, in order to appropriate the latter's energies for themselves. Just like the souls, these viruses help themselves to the available programs of the host, in this case, the computer, in order to slip into the system. Via data, which the computer doesn't recognize as not being its own data at all, because these contain aspects which are the same or like those already stored in the computer, other programs are slipped into the existing operating system. Since these outside programs are basically the same as or like the computer's own programs, the host computer does not recognize them as foreign, but accepts them on the assumption they are its own programs. This is why these outside programs are also called Trojans. Just like the Trojan horse, which was allowed into the besieged city and its soldiers, once there, poured out of the rump of the horse, to then conquer the city from within, exactly in this way do the Trojan programs act in the computers. They reveal their real intentions only when they are within the system they want to conquer. When this goal is reached, then it is possible, depending on the intentions of the outside operator, that the whole programming of the computer can be utilized from without, thus using its storage capacity. Through this, the host computer is damaged. Its performance is reduced, it functions deficiently or is even totally damaged and it can even come to a total computer crash. It is possible that the outside operator, the hacker, also uses the stored data of the host computer to gain, for example, financial advantages.